I remember after my first one was born, an emergency C-section, everyone said to me, well, at least she's healthy. And I was like, what does that mean? I'm not a uterus. Like, she might be healthy. I am not. She might be okay. I am not, you know? And it took years to get over how the hospital treated me and, like, that trauma from that birth and everything that happened in that hospital. No one cares about that. People say, well, at least your baby's happy.
Hello. Welcome to U-Turns. This is the podcast where we talk about all things change. I am Lisa Oz.
And I am Jill Herzig. And, you know, it might be helpful to talk a little bit about how this podcast started.
Ooh, okie doke.
Just for a second, because it was really kind of a moment of sisterhood. Of course, over drinks, because that's when sisterhood is the most fun. And we were sitting there and talking about the state of our lives. And I remember you just had this moment of such clarity and honesty when we were talking about how are we doing really? Not like, oh, how you doing, chit-chat, but how are you doing really? And you said, well, basically, I just sit around thinking, what the F do I do now? The expletive was not deleted in our actual conversation.
It usually isn't.
And I laughed so hard, but I also just connected to it. I thought, that is exactly how I feel. I feel like I am at a crossroads in my life, and I do not know what to do now. And it's weirdly something that I know other people are feeling, and yet nobody seems to be talking about it.
Yeah.
So it opened up a great conversation for us, and it was the sort of birth thought of this podcast, because even in that same conversation, we decided this should be a podcast. This is a podcast. And so, you know, as we've kind of moved through it and talked to all these guests, it's just been so liberating and exciting. They have not all been women. That moment of sisterhood may have been the genesis, but our guests have been men and women, and all of them have been so honest and pushed us, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, our guest today is someone who's devoted the past several years of her life to creating a safe digital space for women to share and connect and support. And she is Ana Pampa Alarcón-Rawls. She is founder and CEO of Find Sisterhood, which is an app and private social network. Ana, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Can you just tell us a bit about what sisterhood means to you?
Sure. So for me, sisterhood basically means women uniting and having each other's back and supporting each other. Since the day I was born, it was my grandma, my mom, my sister, and just women coming together, having each other's back.
Hmm. Well, that sounds like a good definition of sisterhood. I mean, I'd like to think that that was universal, that we can feel that way across genders. But why is it so important that women offer this to one another?
I think personally, for me, it comes from a family that is very tight and being raised by, you know, my mom and having a grandma and having a younger sister. And we were all just like four very powerful women that are a huge pain in the ass for all the men in our family. And then having now my own daughter, to me, I think it's just a very special bond that I have with women in my life. And the people that I know, you know, when everything seems dark, who do you call? And in my case, it was always the women in my life. So I think that's why for me it's so gender specific. But of course, you know, everyone can translate Find Sisterhood however they feel fit for themselves.
I do think historically women have played that role for each other. If you think about, go back millennia, the villages, the women would be together grinding wheat and taking care of the children, and they would connect with each other, and the men were off hunting whatever it was they were hunting. So I think the glue of community really was the female bonding. And I think you lost that, right, when you moved to the United States, the physical presence of your mother, your grandmother, your sisters, all the women that had been your support when you came to the U.S.
Yeah, so I'm half Austrian, half Mexican, and I grew up in both countries, and I have family in both countries as well. And when I came to the U.S., when I met my husband here in New York, you know, I thought it was super exciting and I did miss them, but it was an exciting new chapter in life to be far away from home, to experiencing a new culture, learning English, and just all of those kind of things until I became a mother myself. And all of a sudden that was not fun anymore. And I remember, you know, realizing I'm pregnant and I'm going to have to go through that pregnancy without my own tribe present, and not having that support system was really the hardest part. And I think it changed the way that I entered motherhood. I entered it feeling lonely and very sad about not experiencing it the way that I would have wanted for myself to experience motherhood.
And that struck you from the moment you knew you were pregnant?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The first thing I did is I called my mom. The very first thing, like, my husband didn't even get the chance to say a sentence. I was just like, yeah, whatever, shut the fuck up. I took my phone and I was like, hey, mom, I'm pregnant. I was like, I cannot deal with you right now. I need to deal with my mom right now. And she just like, you know, I feel that way about my mom, always has the right things to say. And she just said, congratulations. She was like, I'm not going to question anything right now. I'm just going to say congratulations. And the next thing was, I'm going to be there for you no matter what.
Mm. How old were you?
I was 25 when I got pregnant the first time. But I was fortunate enough that my mom was actually there while my daughter was born. So she took a lot of time off work and came to New York and stayed with me throughout the last weeks of pregnancy, and then stayed for the first, I think, month of my daughter. And yeah, when I had an emergency C-section at the end, she was the one that was actually with me in the surgery room. So it was my mom, me, and my daughter when Layla was born.
Hmm. Your husband wasn't there?
No, usually they let him out.
This is girl power here.
Real sisterhood here.
Yeah. Do you have women outside of your mother who perform that same sort of role of advice giving and support, other than the app, which we're definitely going to touch on? Community of women, I think that's what you were missing. It wasn't just missing your family, but I think the community of women that you had always had, girls, friends in school. Do you have people like that in real life? Or was that because you didn't have them the reason you sought out to create a digital platform to provide that?
I mean, back then I didn't have that because I was new to the U.S. and then I was new to New York. So I didn't have that. Now I do, and I'm very fortunate of how many friends I have. But interestingly, they're all women. I'm not sure if it might now be related to being married. I do think that that kind of changed the dynamic a little bit, because I used to have my very best childhood friend in Vienna was a man. You know, some of my best friends were men. Now it really somehow became all women. But yeah, I have a lot of friends here in New York, especially because that's where I became a mom. And that's a special bond, your mommy friends, your first mommy friends that go through you, through this with you together. They're still some of my best friends. And now in LA, I have many, many friends. So yeah, changed.
So tell us about that. Tell us about how that period of loneliness after you had a baby sort of generated the idea that, you know, animates your life now.
So, yeah, it was basically, Layla was born, I didn't leave the house for, I'd say, 4 to 6 months. I was just hiding at home in Brooklyn, and I didn't want to really be outside. And once I finally convinced myself I had to be outside. And I remember having to tell myself, because I had...
This was fear, depression?
Yeah, I had postpartum depression, and yeah, I had anxiety of leaving the house. And the only way to get me out was to tell myself that Layla needs fresh air, so I have to go outside. She needs to be outside. And I would go outside for an hour and just run back in the apartment, lock the door behind me, and just didn't want to leave. And then once I finally overcame that fear and I convinced myself I have to go outside, I have to make mommy friends, I'm going to go to breastfeeding circles and all those kind of things and baby yoga, I couldn't really connect to a lot of women, because all of them kept talking about what a beautiful bond breastfeeding is and how beautiful their kids look like and how it fills their heart with joy watching their husbands play with their babies. And isn't that so nice? And I was like, yeah, you know, all of that, but also my nipples are bleeding and I am in pain. And most of the time I want to strangle my husband. and I haven't slept through the night in months. And like, I would definitely not highlight the same things that they highlighted in their lives at that moment.
Yeah. When we come back, we're going to see how Anna solved her problem of loneliness and sharing what was really going on in a digital way. Before the break, we were speaking with founder and CEO of Find Sisterhood, Anna Pampa Alarcón-Rawls, about her need to find a community of women to share intimacy and questions and all those things that we struggle with as women. And now I want to talk about your solution to that search for you. You established an app called Find Sisterhood. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Yeah, so I actually started by interviewing women. So I interviewed over 400 women, moms specifically, trying to understand why it is that we don't really talk about those things openly anymore. Why it is that we went from, you know, generations and generations of having a coffee clutch and play dates to busy working moms that are all also even busier pretending that everything is always perfect. And I found that a lot of it has to do with social media and us always just highlighting on social media the perfect moments of our lives, because you don't post, you know, the shitty moments. You post the moments when your baby looks perfect and you look perfect, and you don't see on Instagram, you don't see that the house is a mess in the background and you just had a fight and you haven't slept in days. You don't see those things. And I think because that's how we see our mommy friends on our phones, and then we meet in real life, and so we're busy pretending because their life is so perfect that ours is as well. And so I feel like a lot of honest conversations just don't happen anymore.
When you interviewed those women, did they say that they were going through the same painful moments that you were and they just had no one to share it with?
Yeah, a lot of them said, you know, I asked them basically, what kind of things do you feel like you cannot talk about anymore? And interestingly, I remember the very first survey was basic topics of what are things. And one of the major things that came out was women saying, I cannot talk about household and cooking, and I don't know how to do certain things, but I don't want to ask because I don't want people to think that I'm old-fashioned. I don't want them to think that I want to cook because I'm in my 20s. I'm supposed to be a modern, new woman and not a housewife. But in reality, there are a lot of housewife questions that I don't know who to ask, because I don't want my friends to know that I actually struggle with those kind of things.
That is so interesting. It's not like we're born domestic goddesses.
Yeah.
Urge fully formed.
Some of us.
Well, Lisa did, but I did not.
Do you think that maybe as we go more and more digital, we lose that ability or the need to connect in real life? You know, so if we're getting all of our feedback and our emotional connection via an app or people that we don't know, that maybe we won't share with the people around us, but it seems like actually it triggers more connection.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just different. It's very different because you can just be very vulnerable. And one of the things that I love to hear from our users is saying, usually I go on social media and I see everyone's, you know, happiest moments and I compare myself to them and I'm like, oh, my life sucks because she's always traveling and this person has the perfect husband and, you know, they all have all of these beautiful photos all of the time. And then you go and find sister and you're like, oh, no, actually, I'm okay. You know, my life is pretty normal because there's this woman that also hasn't had sex in 3 months, or there's this woman who also struggles with her husband, or there's this woman who also doesn't know how to pay rent or who has fertility issues, or, you know, all of those kind of things. And I think in a weird way, it makes them feel happier. And so that's feedback we get a lot, that if women say, after spending half an hour on Find Sisterhood, I actually feel good again and I feel okay, either because I know other women are going through the same things or because I just spent half an hour commenting on other women's posts and helping them. And they're like, I love it. One of my users, for example, became one of my early employees. And she said, my kids are out, they're in college now. And I spent every night an hour on Find Sisterhood giving advice. And she's like, I love it. I'm like a mom of all of those sisters. I love it. And so she was actually the first person that I hired to work for me.
It's fantastic. I mean, and I also love that you're multi-generational, you know? I mean, you have,
yeah.
you're super young. You have many younger employees as well, but you have older women.
Yeah, we're between 20 and 60 from 5 different countries. So we're very international and diverse.
So on the app, no one knows who they are. There's complete anonymity.
Right. So, yeah, when we built Find Sisterhood, it's completely anonymous. So it is a social network, but with the big difference that it's not about competing with others. You don't compete for likes or comments because no one knows who you are. So it's completely pointless to do that. And yeah, that was very important. So I realized that there are many questions, like household questions, that I didn't even think about that women would like to ask, but they don't know where to ask them without having to reveal the identity. So we built Find Sisterhood. We had it in the App Store. And I just wanted to do some user testing first before, you know, really launching the app and really talking with women about it. But then we put it in the App Store weeks after that whole Me Too scandal started. And I think that just really changed the entire dynamic of Find Sisterhood and what it is today. But it completely changed directions. I think probably less than 5% of the posts are actually about motherhood. We had a recent thread of a woman who is a virgin and is about to have sex for the very first time in her life because she waited until marriage and she's like, I'm about to get married. And then we had a prostitute in there. And so she was giving her advice. So you had, you know, the virgin and the prostitute chatting about how, you know, how to have sex for the first time, how to not be scared, how to relax your body, and, you know, how to also experience joy as a woman. And it was so interesting because, like, in real life, you know, those women would probably never meet and have that conversation. And they would probably judge each other as well, you know. And that's something that we completely take away because there's no point in judging an anonymous woman that you don't even know in what country she lives in. Yeah,
so your original purpose has sort of been bypassed almost immediately by something that's more urgent to women, it seems.
Yes, absolutely. I probably also have, you know, I was raised differently, talking about sex very openly, not having shame or guilt around it. But I do realize that, you know, different cultures approach that topic differently. And I still sometimes laugh about it. One of my investors just asked me last week and he said, so how does that feel, you going from a mommy app to now sitting at business meetings talking about sex all the time? And I was like, that's a great question, actually, because I still haven't gotten used to it. It's still interesting because that I'm still adapting to, you know, having an app where 80% of posts are about sex. So that's an interesting shift.
You have these great stories of questioning and exploration and sexual triumph, we'll say. But when we come back, I want to touch a little bit on the other side of the sex questions, the part of the hashtag Me Too, rape, all those bad sides that could be shared on Find Sisters as well. Just before the break, we were talking about the types of stories that women share on Find Sisterhood. We are speaking with the founder and CEO of Find Sisterhood, Ana Pampa Alarcón-Rolls. I wanted to go a little bit into the darker side of this sort of app, the types of stories. I'm sure you have a lot of stories of real trauma and desperation and people coming to the app because they have something serious to share. And I wanted to know how you deal with that. If it's something anonymous, if someone's posting, I'm really depressed and I'm about to commit suicide, how do you approach that sort of post?
So for suicidal posts, we have machine learning. So our system recognizes that someone is posting something suicidal and it automatically comments as a user and posts a suicide prevention hotline.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's one of the things that we do. And in the future, we will be working with nonprofit organizations and redirect women to organizations that can actually help them. Because I think that's something very important that I talk about often with my own team, that we always have to remember, even if it, you know, sounds harsh, but we have to distance ourselves in order to, you know, maintain our own mental health. So it's very important to remember we're a tech company. Right. We're not psychologists, we're not life coaches, and we cannot take responsibility for thousands of women in the world. We just can't. We can look on the technical side, on the data, and how do we best help these women? How do we best connect them with resources? But that's not who we are as people. You know, we are the people that are running a tech company.
Do you get a lot of those types of posts of women in desperate places?
Yeah, we get a lot of them. I would say we get more survivor stories. That's the bigger thing. We get a lot of survivor stories, and survivors then reaching out, sending us emails with even more details, you know, because they're so desperate to talk to someone. And then they feel safe and find sisterhood. The feedback they get helps them. And then they reach out to me, and then they're like, hey, you know, thank you so much for creating Find Sisterhood. And then there is this whole, you know, story about the rape. And I, you know, it gets sometimes really hard. And especially during the Kavanaugh hearing, which has triggered a lot of women, for example, we had hundreds of posts. And having to, you know, navigate that is, I think, challenging for the users as well as for our team members. Yeah.
What do they, when they share a story, triggered maybe by Kavanaugh hearing, triggered, who knows?
Yeah.
You know, it feels like every day we have a breaking news story of someone, you know, someone's victimhood. So how does sharing that story help these women move on?
Well, I think a lot of times it's just for women. I mean, I don't, you know, I would say it's probably being able to just tell someone, you know. And I think that was the main intention for Find Sisterhood when I built it. And I think that's also how victims see it, that eventually you just want to put it out there. You know, maybe no one knows that it's you. Maybe you will never tell your friends. Maybe you will never report that person. But knowing I told someone and I was able to put it out there. And I think that's very powerful to be able to do that. And in a lot of ways, it's also you don't have to have your entire life spiral. You're able to talk about those incidents without having to reveal your identity. And in a lot of cases, women actually reported their assault after posting in Find Sisterhood, which, you know, the very first time that happened was actually the day or the week when I founded Find Sisterhood as a company, because it used to be my hobby. I mean, it used to be an app that I, you know, I had with my husband together, and we were just like playing around. But then one day a woman had posted about her rape story that she had never reported. And then she got the feedback on Find Sisterhood, and it was a huge dialogue that started for her the very first time in her life. And so afterwards she went and she reported that man. And she reached out to me and she said, you know, you changed my life. Being able to talk about it, being able to get feedback, I just reported him. And I feel so empowered. And when I got that email, it was 3 a.m. in L.A., and I woke up and I checked my emails. I couldn't sleep. And I woke up my husband and I said, I'm going to start a company. Find Sisterhood is going to become a company, and I want every woman in the world to know that there is an app to listen and to be there when they go through those kind of things.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very powerful stuff for sure.
What do you do about negative trolls on there? Because some people just love to say nasty things. So if you are... take the risk and put your story online and you're vulnerable, and then some woman comes along and trash talks. How do you as a company deal with that?
We don't allow that. So I take that very serious, and I think it's the responsibility of tech companies to make sure that those kind of things don't happen. So we don't allow fake news to spread on Find Sisterhood. We don't allow anyone bullying people. We don't allow any of those kind of things. No judgment. And we block users. And since I'm a mom of two kids myself, I don't have a lot of time. I run a company and I run a household and my kids. I have a zero tolerance policy. So there's not even a discussion. If you can't be nice, you get blocked and you can't come back.
Is it an algorithm or is there someone in the back reading every single comment?
No, there is someone in the back reading every single comment and every single post. Not someone, several people are doing that.
Wow.
And so we're censoring very, very heavily, and we will always continue doing that. That's one of the main things for us. I think that we're not any other social network that just doesn't take any responsibility for what's happening. We take responsibility, and I take that very serious.
So, Anna, tell us how we can be better sisters to one another in real life.
Well, I think the most important thing is to not judge someone else, because you don't know their story and you don't know where they're coming from. That is that is the main thing that we as women can do for one another, you know. And that also means don't shame other women, don't shame them for how they dress, how they raise their kids, or for deciding not to have kids. And I think if
motherhood seems to be such a source of shaming, it's so strange.
Yes.
I mean, we sort of talked about how, you know, in earlier times and earlier traditions, women kind of gathered around one another and the motherhood sort of traditions were passed down. But now it feels like what's mostly passed down is, why are you doing that with your baby? You're doing that wrong. You know, how come you're sending your kid to that school? It just feels very judgy.
Yeah, and it's also interesting that as soon as you become a mother, you don't matter anymore. Like, people say, how is the baby doing? I remember after my first one was born, an emergency C-section, everyone said to me, well, at least she's healthy. And I was like, what does that mean? I'm not a uterus. Like, she might be healthy. I am not. She might be okay. I am not, you know? Yeah. And it took years to get over how the hospital treated me and, like, that trauma from that birth and everything that happened in that hospital. No one cares about that. People say, well, at least your baby's happy, you know? At least your baby's healthy. So I think
there is a strange...
Yeah.
It's a funny U-turn when you first have a baby because there's this sort of erasure of self that happens.
Yeah.
That's a whole other podcast. Anna, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, thank you. This was super illuminating. If you want to get the Find Sisterhood app, it is available on the App Store, and it's a really interesting experience. You have to identify as a woman, by the way, listeners. I think that's the definition that you use, and it's open to anyone who identifies as a woman. So mind that.
And connect with us here at U-Turns Podcast.